Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Great to be here and to visit with you all. How many children do I have now? Anybody know?
Three.
One, two, and three. And they're all a year apart, and, well, no one ever gave us a prize for being intelligent on that mark. But, you know, life can really get interesting after a while. I think God has a sense of humor and puts us in our place and gives us all kinds of challenges. And we've traveled quite a bit across the country. We've put on around 23 to 25,000 miles since December. And I think we're still in our right minds, but maybe you can judge us afterwards. But anyway, it's great to be here. Lots of memories here. Living in this apartment up here and trying to remember all those days of coming back from Africa and lots of good memories. And I was trying to think of a memory that I could relate to you or tell you about that maybe you didn't know. You know my family pretty well, and you know my father especially. He's the one that we like to tell stories about. And I thought of a story this morning that maybe you'll appreciate about Dad. I can remember I was a little ankle biter. I was about 3 years old, and in Congo there, and we had to move to a different station, a station called Adi. Or it was Aja, I think it was. Anyway, in those days, the United Nations was going around and inoculating the world for smallpox, if you can remember that, back in the late 60s. And they came to our little corner of Congo, and basically they came to the village leaders, and they said, all the Africans have to come to the village square on this day, and y'all are going to get an inoculation, a shot for smallpox. And it's mandatory, and everyone needs to show up. So we showed up there, and with all the Africans that come together to the village square, and we, of course, were the only Muzungus, the only white people there at the time. And so they had this nice tent set up with all this fancy equipment and everything. And they had this newfangled inoculation gun. It was a pneumatic gun, and it would they'd stick it up on your arm, and this pressure of air somehow would put the serum into your arm. And it would kind of go off with a little, like, you know, kind of like that. And, of course, the Africans, you know, not many of them had been educated much in those days. And they saw this little gun there, and, boy, their eyes were big, you know. And they're like, we're going to get shot today, folks, you know. And so the UN folks, the doctors and nurses and whatnot, had this ill-fated idea to try to ask my dad to be the first one to have the shot. And y'all know my dad, and he never likes to give up an opportunity. And so they haul into the front of the line. Actually, all five of us, including the kids, were hauled to the front of the line. And you can imagine, you know, dark, deepest Africa with all these dark Africans. You can see all the whites of their eyes. They're huge, you know. And they're looking and watching to see what happens. And they came up with a gun to Dad's arm, and they nailed him, and he screamed at the top of his voice. And you can just imagine, the Africans were just headed for the bushes. I mean, they were gone. I mean, every which way you can imagine, they were gone. And my dad was just splitting his gut. He thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened. You know, and can you imagine what those UN doctors and nurses were thinking? I mean, they wanted to crucify him on the spot. And, anyway, Dad spent the next 20 minutes rounding up all the Africans. You know, come on back, it was just for fun, you know, and they all laughed, and they love a practical joke. So anyway, they eventually all did get inoculated, including us, and it wasn't that bad. But anyway, fun times. It's a privilege to be here and to speak with you. Having been here as a child and having learned from you, and I came to know Christ here in this building via some of the brothers ministering, and I'm so grateful for the heritage that I have here and for the friendships that I made and for the wonderful times. And even though distance separates us, it is not forgotten, and I just want you to know that. So I'm grateful to be here with you. I do have, you've met Rebecca, I think, and the three children. We have... I met Rebecca in Nicaragua, and while down there flying for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Rebecca was a teacher down there, and there's a verse here that I want to share with you that kind of puts things together for me in my life, and it's in Isaiah 25, and it says, "O Lord, you are my God, and I will exalt you. I will give thanks to your name, for you have worked wonders." We talked this morning in the early meeting about wonders, plans formed long ago with perfect faithfulness. You know, and God is faithful to take us in our walks with Him along whatever walks of life we go. God is faithful to show us His way, and as we're obedient to Him and we follow Him, God does awesome and wonderful things. And never in my wildest dreams did I think I would ever be in an Islamic nation, one that can be very, very dangerous, and one that is so incredibly needy. And this little pudgy little boy that used to run around here, just come to think that God would ever see fit to use me as a humbling thing. And so I'm grateful. Becca grew up in Honduras. I'll just review a little bit. She grew up in Honduras, so she's got a few screws loose as well. And she was the daughter of missionaries. She was the daughter of missionaries there in Honduras, and actually was born in Managua, Nicaragua, where I had lived there for many years, and decided that she wanted to go back and visit the place where she was born and go there and teach there. And really, it was God just knew that I needed somebody to feed me, and so. Anyway, met her there, and we got engaged. And some people think of this concept that God has a call on our life, you know, and if you're going to be a missionary, He's got to give you a call. And I don't really, as time goes on, I don't really feel really strong about that anymore. It's more along the lines, you know what, God calls us to walk with Him. And as we walk with Him, wherever He walks with us, He gives us appointments and opportunities. And that's what happened to Rebecca and I. We never sought to go to a place like Afghanistan. And yet while we were there, Mission Aviation Fellowship, whom we're with now, leased this airplane from the company that I was working for. And they asked this company, "Do you have any pilots that you really want to get rid of?" And they said, "Yes, we know somebody." So they asked Rebecca and I if we would go. And you know, as we sit there and we contemplate that kind of a wild and incredible decision, and thinking that maybe, you know, were we really prepared for this? And as we prayed about it, it was just apparent that God was giving us an appointment. He was giving us an opportunity. That's what appointments are. They're opportunities. We have a choice to embrace them or not. And no matter what walks of life we're in, God can appoint you for some job or for some task. And we have the choice and the ability to say yes or no. And Rebecca and I felt like we needed to accept this, and we went there for 1 year. And somehow or another, we stayed for 4.5 years. And it was just apparent that God wanted us there and that we were being used. And in the midst of being there, you know, God grew this passion and this desire to minister to Muslim peoples and to Afghan peoples. And now as we unbelievably look to go back to that land on October 6th, God has instilled within us a desire to reach these Afghan friends that we've made with the gospel of Jesus. And that was never there before we went. But you know, it's just that one step at a time, God leads you down a path and He gives you what He wants you to do. When we first got there, MAF is there under a title called PACTEC. We've probably heard of that from us. It's MAF's humanitarian organization that works in that country. Because that country is what we call a restricted access nation, you cannot go there as a church planter. You cannot go there as an evangelist. You cannot go there as a church worker or as a person who teaches in a seminary. That kind of traditional way for a missionary to get on the field does not exist. And so you have to offer some sort of technology, some sort of gifting that allows the country to rebuild itself or to make itself a little more advanced in this world today. And so that's what we do. As I said, we started, when we first went there, we had four families. And unbelievably now, when we count them up, there's at least 30 family units now out there. And if we count them all, including the kids, there's over 100 of us there. And so it's incredible what God has done. He's taken this little idea to use an airplane to help in the rebuilding of Afghanistan, and now we've blossomed into this huge monster and living in Kabul and different areas of Afghanistan. And God is using each person, each one of us in there in our own personal relationships. And we'll get into that in a little bit later. But right now what I'd like to do is show you a video that kind of explains our program. And hopefully that will be informative to you, and we'll build on that afterwards. So bear with me as I get it started here. Maybe we can get the lights turned out there.
For decades, the people of Afghanistan have been devastated by war. A fragile infrastructure remains. Although slowly progressing, large areas of the country are still in ruin and unstable.
The infrastructure of the entire country is in bad shape, and especially healthcare. The statistics for healthcare are among the worst in the world.
The maternity death rate is the highest one in all over the world.
There's more women dying in childbirth in Badakhshan than anywhere else on the face of the earth. There's women dying every day up there, they should not be dying.
The work of international relief, development, and Christian organizations, also known as NGOs, is crippled by harsh terrain and the insecurity of the region. Safe transportation and reliable, secure communication solutions are desperately needed in order to enable NGOs to do their work. PACTEC exists to meet this need. PACTEC is a Christian nonprofit NGO working in Afghanistan to share God's grace and multiply the effectiveness of other NGOs.
There's some wonderful groups of people working in Afghanistan right now, but they have some obstacles to overcome. They have security that is a problem in many of the places. They also have communication needs so that they can do their work better. PACTEC responds to those needs by helping those people get from A to B safely in an airplane up above the areas that are insecure.
Operating a fleet of 3 King Airs and 1 Cessna aircraft, PACTEC provides flight and communication services to Christian workers, serving the millions of unreached people who have never seen the gospel lived out among them.
The Pashtun people illustrate what's going on in the Muslim world today. It's a time of increased hostility to the gospel and increased receptivity to the gospel.
And the Pashtun people are going to seek to meet their spiritual needs some way. We found that those needs can be met by Christians who are here, lending a hand, being a friend, meeting some of their physical needs and doing it because they're responding to the call on their life from Jesus Christ.
If Christians were not there, I think what we could see is very similar to a return to a situation, the turmoil that you had under the Taliban at that time.
Matthew 5:16 really comes to mind, where it says that we would be the light. Our actions, our life would be the light of the world, and we would be, our actions would show the life of Jesus Christ living in us. And that's what PACTEC is. PACTEC brings, through its aviation, through its ministry, it brings the gospel of Christ in and about Afghanistan.
Culture, religion, and society have isolated the rural Afghan people, and reaching them is difficult. Afghanistan is rugged and mountainous. In some areas, peaks can reach as high as 25,000 feet. Most roads are not maintained, and constant security concerns make it unsafe to travel this way.
IAM is a Christian organization. It started here in 1966 at the invitation of the Afghan government. We work in all sorts of health-related and development-related areas. PACTEC have helped us opening up other rural areas to access, because the Afghan people are rural people.
Right now, we're looking to open up projects in different provinces. That's our hope. If PACTEC's not here, then that's something that we wouldn't be able to do.
Currently, PACTEC is flying 2,000 NGO relief and development passengers a month and 30 tons of cargo, operating in and out of 25 airstrips, 11 of which PACTEC staff have helped build or refurbish over the last few years. In the past year, PACTEC helped build the Yawan airstrip and refurbish the old airstrip in Huahan, both in Afghanistan's very mountainous northeast Badakhshan province.
So if you go on horse and foot, it takes at least 3 days to get there. By aeroplane, 10 to 15 minutes, so it's a real difference.
By serving these airstrips, PACTEC supports NGOs providing assistance for remote medical clinics, water projects, schools, and other reconstruction efforts. This also gives PACTEC staff the opportunity to disciple Afghans, to lead the development of their nation, to do what they could and should do for themselves. During the past three winter seasons, PACTEC has coordinated the hiring of unemployed farmers to keep 10 high mountain airstrips clear of snow. This allows urgent access to these isolated locations throughout the winter.
We wouldn't be able to get out. We would have to walk out. We wouldn't be able to get supplies, we wouldn't be able to get mail from home. We would be very isolated without PACTEC.
The communications branch of PACTEC provides secure satellite, or VSAT, and wireless connectivity for internet, email, and voice.
PACTEC offers quite a bit of support to us as far as communications go. Mercy Corps, as well as other NGOs, in the last decade, I think, have professionalized in the field, and the amount of information that the size of our programs requires constant communication.
The PACTEC team has installed over 90 VSAT systems all across Afghanistan and currently maintains these systems to provide the communication support needed by NGOs.
PACTEC have enhanced the way we communicate.
Right behind us now we have our PACTEC VSAT system, and this gives us full internet access to email, ability to transfer files, and just in general communicate with our field staff.
The communications branch of PACTEC recently graduated its third communication and information technology class. Local Afghans are being trained to operate and troubleshoot computer operating systems, networks, and VSAT systems. The communication and aviation services provided by PACTEC today are crucial to both the efficiency and the security of humanitarian groups meeting the immediate needs of the Afghan people. Beyond that, PACTEC has a long-term ministry plan, which includes the development of staff as servant leaders. PACTEC considers these Afghan staff members the leaders who will rebuild their country on a firm biblical foundation. The long-term mission of PACTEC is to support local Afghan leaders to transform their communities using sustainable technologies. PacTech has begun working on projects with local Afghan leaders, both in aviation and in communications, which will support long-term reconstruction and development.
In Afghanistan, we don't have anywhere a school for pilot here, for civilian side, and also air traffic controller, or to train flight safety, or electronics.
PacTech has plans to assist the Afghan government in developing the Afghan School of Aviation.
What our goal is to build capacity in Afghanistan itself, so that the aviation needs of Afghanistan will be met by Afghans. And so what our desire is to do is to train, is to bring up Afghans to a level that they can respond to the aviation needs of their own country.
Through the installation and use of telemedicine and distance education, hospitals and clinics will be able to provide better diagnosis and treatment for their patients.
In Afghanistan, there's basically no pathology available. That service in a country of 28 million is not available. That's an outrageous situation in this world today.
Afghan doctors and nurses will be able to advance their level of medical education.
I can tell you that these young men are really eager to learn. And the telemedicine link, it gives them an opportunity to get the very latest data, to get the very latest information so that they can learn.
Progress is being made in Afghanistan, and you can be a part of that. Support for PacTech reaches far beyond equipment and operational costs. Your investment will enable the gospel to be lived out among the Afghan people in every corner of the country. Afghan leaders will have the opportunity to develop the professional and servant leadership skills they need to bring fresh hope to their fellow Afghans as they continue to rebuild their country and their lives.
So what you have there is technology in action in a restricted access nation. It's going on in lots of nations in the world where the humanitarian work, which is being done, by the way, by all kinds of secular organizations, there's an opportunity for mission organizations to get involved in a humanitarian work and have that opportunity to get involved in a place like Afghanistan. There are literally probably, I say at least hundreds, if not thousands, of Christians living in Afghanistan. And they're living there for the sole purpose is so that they can be transparent in what they believe and the fact that they follow Jesus and that they walk with Jesus. And as they work alongside Afghans in all kinds of technologies, we're talking agriculture, medical work, well digging, ministry to widows, lots of widows in Afghanistan because of all the war in the past 30 years, and all kinds of strategies so that we can sit there and we can walk alongside these Afghan friends of ours. And PacTech, or MAF, no matter however you want to call it, PacTech strategically has decided that we're going to hire as many Afghans as possible, and we have well over 100 Afghan employees that we work with daily and we walk with side by side. And we live a different life than what the other contractors, foreign contractors that are there. And they see that we're different. And they worship on Fridays. And you know what? We worship on Fridays because they worship on Fridays. And so they go to the mosque and worship, and then we go to our church and we worship. It's a foreign church, mind you, but we worship all the same. And they see that we're devout people and that we honor and we respect God. You know, incredible to them, because you know what their mullahs tell them? They tell them that Christians are immoral people, and that because of Hollywood and because of the cartoons that were printed in Europe, that Christians are people that blaspheme God, and that churches are places where immoral acts are done. And you guys, it blows our mind, but this is the concept that they have. And so when we live a godly life before them, they see that we're different. and they see, and when they ask us if we're Christian, actually I like to tell them I'm not a Christian, I follow Jesus. Because their concept of Christians is totally different than what our concept of a Christian is. So it's a very different world that we live in, and it takes strategic purpose and plan to be there and to live out God's love among them. I want to talk a little bit about the us versus them concept, and then I'll show a few slides here before we end. Us versus them. You guys, we live in a scary world. Man, is it scary. Ever since 9/11, our world has been rocked to the core. And you guys here are not exempt from this. And you've seen it on the television. It has taken effect in your life and all kinds of security issues and things like that. And you know what? It's begun to make the world separated between Islam and Christianity. And you know what? We really feed that. We feed that when we think, you know what? We ought to go over there and make that place just a great big bunch of glass out there in that sand. Let's just blow them all to pieces. And I challenge you, is that really God's perspective? Does God think it's us versus them? Does he look at Christians and he looks at Muslims and he says, you know what, I'm only with the Christians and I'm not with the Muslims. You know what, Jesus came to die, and he came to die for everybody in this world. It doesn't matter whether they're enemy or friend, foe or friend. And so I really challenge you folks to try, and it's hard for me too, when we see all this destruction on TV and all the incredible acts of horrific acts of violence that is done in the name of Allah, their God, okay? It's done in the name of Allah, and it's done against Christians. We think that Islam is the worst thing ever. But you know what? Islam is a bunch of people who follow a creator, almighty God, and they're trying to get to God through good works. And how is that any different than people here who don't realize that salvation comes through Jesus? How is that any different from Christians here who are trying to get to heaven through good works and trying to get to God through good works? So I challenge you to think of Muslims as real people that God loves. And the friends that we have, the friends that Rebecca and I have, they love us and they care for our kids. And they're wonderful and they're hospitable, and they're not this radical brand of Islam. And so let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. So I encourage you to think along those lines. It's another issue is that it's an honor and a shame culture. Okay, what is an honor and a shame based culture? That's a culture where if an Afghan becomes, quote-unquote, a Christian, a follower of Jesus, and he's made to be known to be a Christian, it brings shame on the whole community. They call it the Ummah. And he brings shame on all of Afghanistan because he's an Afghan, and because you're an Afghan, you have to be Muslim, and you now call yourself a Christian, you deserve death because you brought shame upon us. And I'll tell you what, this idea of shame so permeates the culture. It is stronger than the ties of family. And that's why you'll see fathers whose daughter is caught in immorality or whatever, he will kill his own daughter. Unbelievable stuff, and it's because of the shame-based culture. And so we are missionaries living in a place like Afghanistan that doesn't allow missionaries to be there. And yet the government, they know that we're Christians. You know, and they're not dumb. They know that we're missionaries, but we try our very best not to dishonor them. And so even though they know that we're here, they want us there, by the way, because we're doing a good work. But so long as we don't dishonor them, so long as we don't end up in the newspaper saying that, you know what, we help this Afghan over here to convert to Jesus. And I'm going to talk more about this tonight and about how a Muslim can come to faith in Jesus Christ. And how it's happened. It's happened with our little group of believers there. Some have been led, some Afghans have been led to Christ. And one of them was in an incredibly miraculous way. And tonight I want to share about that. And if you want to come back and listen to that, I'd be grateful, because it's really encouraging and incredible what God is doing. So right now I just want to show you some slides of our life in Afghanistan with some Afghans. And I just want to encourage you to think of Afghans as real people that God loves. And look in their faces. And hopefully you won't see hatred like we see on the television all the time. But hopefully you'll see people who are searching and who really need the love of Jesus. So we'll go ahead and show that now, and then I'll finish with a couple words.
Knowing that you keep thinking of love.
I'd like to finish with a story. You know, God's doing incredible things in the Islamic world, and there are all kinds of stories I could tell. And one or two of them I'm going to tell tonight. But one that I want to relate to you now has to do with the fact that there's a cost. And that, in fact, it really is a scary thing to be in a foreign land where God as we know Him is not accepted. And we had a short-term guy. He was probably 21 or 22 years old. He came out for just a short 2 or 3 month visit, and we were remiss in that we didn't give him a good security briefing on how to handle yourself in Kabul. And he decided he was going to go on a little walk up on a hillside in the middle of Kabul. And one of the security things that you learn is you never go anywhere by yourself, especially in a secluded area. Ended up on top of this hill and was really enjoying his time photographing the city. And he saw four men in the distance, and they were all walking towards him. And he had just learned a few of the Dari words of the Persian language, and he was going to go over there and greet them, and just try to use some of his language. So he walked up to them, and they came towards him and walked up to him, and he extended his hand in friendship. And instead of taking his hand, they punched him full in the face, and they knocked him to the ground. And one of them had a gun and started beating him in his back, and basically subdued the fella so that he wasn't going to resist anymore. And they hauled him up to his feet, and they took him off to the corner of the hillside where they had their car parked, and they shoved him in the back of their car, in the trunk of their car, and drove off through Kabul, and they were going to escape with him. Now there's an end to this story, but I'm not going to tell you now, and you're going to beat me for this, but you got to come tonight to find out what happened. But it really is a scary